Welcome to Book of Boredom podcast. This episode of Saints includes chapters 28, 29, and 30 of the book from Saints Volume 1. It's about the Mormon War. So when people say the Mormon War, they're talking about this particular scuffle, right?
Yes.
So it's not the earlier one where they got kicked out of Jackson County.
Or the later one when they got kicked out of Nauvoo.
Right. At the end of the day, a lot of people didn't actually die, but a lot of bad things happened.
Yes.
And some people were killed as well. Let's play this first clip. I've called this Turn the Cheek or Brandish a Fence Post.
Election Day is very different today than it was in that time period. Election Day always involved a lot of alcohol and actual electioneering, campaigning right there.
At the polling site.
At the polling site.
Right.
A couple of things that aren't permitted today. There are so many Mormons there now that they can sway the vote if they vote as a block. So that's a real concern for the Missourians. When they go to try and vote, there's some opposition, a punch is thrown, and pretty soon we have a fist fight going that actually lasts just a couple of minutes, but people are left bloodied.
John was determined to protect his fellow saints. Spotting a pile of fence rails, he grabbed a thick piece of oak and rushed to the fight. "Oh yes, you Danites," he cried out. "Here is a job for us."
One of the candidates had fired everybody up, condemning the Mormons and saying they shouldn't be allowed to vote.
He had thought that the Mormons were going to vote for him, and they'd switched their allegiance, and so now he's just going to rail on them to try to fire up the opposition.
I reckon John was firing everyone up. What do you reckon, Jones?
I'm of two minds of this. It's always better to be peaceful.
Yeah.
But also sometimes you can't be.
I know.
They don't mention, I don't know if history mentions, who actually threw the punch. The way that they say a punch was thrown, if it had been a Missourian that punched a Mormon, you know damn well they would have said some motherfucking heathen punched a saint in the face and
right.
The battle was on. No, so probably some Mormon who was probably drunk because Mormons drank back then with no problem.
Ooh.
Punched a Missourian, and that's how it started. I don't think both sides were blameless by any stretch of the imagination, because as mentioned in that clip, he was calling out for Danites. Danites were like the secret society enforcers for the Mormons. They were ready to throw down.
It tells you a little bit more about John in the book. He'd only just rocked up.
Oh, yeah?
He was going there to vote, and he'd only arrived a max of about 9 weeks ago. Do you have the right to vote in a county when you've only been there 9 weeks?
I suspect he was probably not there to vote. He was there to be a bodyguard or use violence if it was necessary, or to use violence so that they could try and influence stuff to go their way, because the Danites were there to do the violence.
Yeah, he seemed quite keen for it. And the irony is that I don't think any of them voted. Even when they were allowed in, he thought that there was an enclosed space and they'd be trapped.
Not only that, they say that there were enough Mormons to sway the vote, but I bet they were still outnumbered by the Missourians.
Absolutely. Now, I've got a question for you, because they mentioned back then elections were done differently. How is your experience different from back then?
I drive down to the nearest polling place.
In your electric vehicle.
Well, actually, what I will do is I'll vote by mail.
That's the way.
Or you go and stand in line at a location that's been designated as an official voting spot. 1 year it was a credit union. 1 year it was an elementary school. I stand in line, push the buttons on the computer screen. I get the little printout. I get a sticker.
Wow.
That says, I voted. I put it on my shirt.
That's right. You have voting machines there, don't you? Mm-hmm. We don't do that. Ours are all still pencil and paper.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, which is a bit prehistoric. Are there people that are allowed to advertise their candidacy around the polling booths?
No, there are laws that say there cannot be any campaigning of any sort within X amount of distance from the polling space.
Okay.
So you can't have signs up. You can't have people out there with pamphlets. I mean, there's even laws laws in the books, which are kind of causing some controversy. I don't remember what state it's in, where it's illegal to even hand out water to the people standing in line.
Oh, I heard about that.
As I recall, that was mainly targeted at people handing out water or food to people of color in low-income areas.
Right.
Middle-class white dude me drove there. It's in a nice place, which probably has enough room for me to go inside and be in the air conditioning. Places that are in the very poor neighborhoods are going to be this shitty little setup where everybody's standing in line. And if it's in the south, it's going to be hot or humid or both, and it's just not going to be pleasant. Or it's going to be up in the north, and it's going to be cold and freezing and snowing or sleet, because in November is when we do elections.
Right, yeah.
But the supposed impetus behind that is because it could be used to influence the voters.
Because you're interacting.
Right. You have provided me with something. Therefore, I'm going to vote for you or for the candidate you're representing. But you can't even do that in many states. So bring your water bottle, I guess.
It's a bit of a stretch, isn't it?
It is.
At our polling booths, we do have people that are allowed to give out pamphlets. Usually they'll ask you, have you made up your mind? And you just sort of ignore them or just nod. You don't have to engage. I think there must be some rules about them not being able to do it too aggressively, though, because they don't sort of really try and hammer at you. Once they've asked you once, they just sort of leave it at that. You can feel when you line up that everyone's trying to make sure we're going to disagree, but we're going to be really, really civil about this and just line up and do it. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if there weren't laws against it. You would have fucking MAGA psychopaths out there on one side, and you would have hardcore militant left-wing liberals on the other side, and there would be bloodshed because Americans can't do anything civilly. They have to be fuckers about it. For example, I don't know if you have noticed or heard about it, but Utah recently got a new flag.
I didn't know about that. Tell me more. That's interesting.
Our old flag was simply the state seal on a blue background. That was the flag. It was hard to read, and it looked very similar to a few other states' flags. It really wasn't anything unique. It was kind of stupid.
Yeah.
So people submitted designs, and then there was public discussion. There was no vote on it. The legislature just said, okay, this is our new flag.
Okay.
It's actually kind of nice, but got picked up by the conservatives in the state that this was a woke flag.
Oh, God.
Because the person who designed it said the blue represents the sky and the reds represent the red rock.
So?
One element represented the native tribes. Something about inclusivity of all people. Trigger words for the conservative snowflake. So the conservatives went apeshit. They're like, no, you're stealing our history and the old flag's better. It wasn't. It was shit. The reason I bring this up is because these people put together a petition. Their first petition was to just get the flag rejected. They didn't get enough people signing on for that. So their next thing was to get a petition to put the new design on the ballot so that people could vote on it. And they would stand outside of the local grocery store, outside of Walmart, outside any big event whatsoever, trying to get people to sign their petition.
Really?
And they were super aggressive about it. They would get up in your face. Do you know that they're trying to get rid of our historic flag? Blah, blah, blah. Do you know that Utah legislature has decided that we have to have a new flag? Yeah, I love it. It's awesome, man. They go, One guy was like, oh, well, it doesn't represent, it's doing away with historical. I'm like, dude, I like the flag.
Right.
Leave me alone. I'm not talking to you.
I just had a look at it, too. It's pretty nice, the new one. It's clearer.
It's a better design choice.
Yeah.
It is clearer.
Right.
And it is distinct.
And it still has the beehive on it.
Which is annoying because that's from Deseret bullshit Mormon stuff, but...
But there are a lot of Mormons there.
Yeah. But anyways, they were supposed to get X amount of signatures to get it put on the ballot. They asked for an extension 3 times.
Wow.
And they got rejected the 3rd time because they could not get enough people to sign the petition.
Yeah.
Like, these people were just super fucking aggressive about it. So I can't even imagine what they would be like if they were outside of a polling place.
Right.
So I'm glad they're not allowed to do that here. The problem is there's too many fucking returned Mormon missionaries around here.
Oh.
Who spent 2 years literally required to go talk to people not wanting to fucking talk to them.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, they don't care. I have two ways to avoid contact. One, I have my headphones on, look elsewhere. I act like I'm listening to music. Or on the rare occasion where I don't have my headphones because I forgot them for some reason, I look really pissed off. A big 6'2", 280-pound guy, bald, looking really grumpy, tends to get them to that. But even then, there are some who are, fuck off, dude.
All right. So this one I've called Forcing the Law Doesn't Seem Legal.
So after this incident, the Latter-day Saints become very concerned that they're not going to be treated fairly before the law. One of the leaders of the Danites and several of his men, I think there were about 40, go to Black's home. Black was a justice of the peace. They try and force him to sign a document saying that he will ensure that the Latter-day Saints are treated fairly before the law. Black refuses to sign. Later in the day, Joseph Smith, with another group of men, comes. About 100 men show up at Black's house.
Joseph says, fine, if you don't want to sign ours, make your own. He writes out some sort of statement, but it's really to no effect.
And this becomes a major issue in the conflict because the Mormons try and force a local justice of peace to sign a document, something that really sticks in the craw of the Missourians.
Right? You don't rock up to the house with a bunch of armed men and go, you're a lawmaker, protect our rights at gunpoint. You might make an appointment and say, look, we're really worried. Then he'll hear you out.
When you hear that sort of stuff, it really makes sense why there's a large element of Mormons that are attracted to the MAGA January 6th storming the Capitol. Look, the fucking founder of their cult was doing the same shit.
Right.
Didn't come to anything. Yeah, because you got an armed fucking mob. The thing that you're saying, oh, boo-hoo, it didn't work. That was threatening a official of the government, and you're acting like you guys were the victims here.
They charged him with it later, nothing too serious, and he managed to argue that he should be tried in Caldwell County instead. I don't know why that was a thing. Apparently that was his home, but his home was really in Davis County. He loved Adam on the Underpants.
Yes.
That was his favorite place.
Of course.
They were doing a nice at him by letting him be tried elsewhere, and I think it ended up just getting dropped.
Joseph Smith was able to skirt from all his shit up until the very end.
I know.
And even when he did get caught, he eventually was able to escape, or he was able to get somebody to help him out.
Mm.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
All right, I've called this one. Governor Boggs stays out of it.
Joseph sent a plea for Governor Boggs' help. Boggs insisted the conflict was between them and the mob. They must fight it out.
Boggs is quite a character. We do have to give him credit because he also refused to help the mob who was trying to get help from the state. He was trying to be a little bit neutral.
It must be a nightmare for politicians to take office, something they probably dreamed about for years, and all of a sudden they just get plagued by endless factions that just can't fucking agree on anything and just make your life miserable. Well, Joseph was one of those factions, and the mob was a faction as well. I bet Boggs would get breakfast in the morning, have his coffee, and then see all of these reports on his desk and be just like, not today, Satan.
I find it very hard to have sympathy for any politician. Like, they fucking signed up for it. It's interesting to hear her say, oh, he was quite a character, but we do have to give him some credit. That's the first time I've ever heard a Mormon say anything like that. Because Governor Boggs was the spawn of Satan. He wanted the Mormons dead. It is interesting for me to hear this person say, oh, we have to give him some credit.
Oh, I'm going to give him some credit.
Mormons don't say anything about how Governor Boggs tried to stay out of it. At least the Mormonism that I grew up in.
Oh.
Governor Boggs tried to kill the Mormons. That's what you hear about Governor Boggs.
Isn't it funny how the tune changes?
It's Mormonism, so the tune is always changing.
Right, because Joseph changed his tune repeatedly.
Within the same speech sometimes.
He's going to change his tune in today's story as well. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Yeah.
When he submitted a request to Governor Boggs for help, this was actually after the mobs had started attacking settlements near Adam on Diamond. Adam on the Ramen? I mean, how do you want to say this? Adam Salty Ramen.
A bullshit field that Joseph saw, and maybe he saw that it was a good hunting spot.
Right.
I've never been there, but my wife, she's been there.
Oh, what'd she think?
It was a fucking field.
Right.
This is paradise. This is where the New Jerusalem is supposed to be established. It's a goddamn field. I think there's a rock and a couple trees. She remembers being extremely unimpressed.
Right.
I suspect he just thought this would be a good place to be able to establish his end of days cult. And well, that didn't pan out.
It really didn't.
As well as Kirtland and a little worse than Nauvoo, but eventually Nauvoo went the exact same way that did. Joseph couldn't really pick a winner for long term.
He kept prophesying that they were winners and was wrong. You know what you call that? That's a false prophet.
All prophets are false because they're just making shit up.
That's right. This next one I've called Burning Down the House. Yeah, so things start to get escalated.
Agnes was a young wife and mother. Her husband was away. In the middle of the night, a mob dragged her from her bed, dragged her two little girls from their bed, forced them outside, and then they burned the cabin to the ground. She can see that her neighbors are also being attacked at the same time. She, through the night, walks with two little girls, one on each hip. It's cold, and she has to ford a stream. It's waist deep, and finally makes it to Adamondiaman and help.
Yeah, that's horrible. Next.
I mean, yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, it does. I think they were about 3 miles away or something like that from Adamondiaman. So they really weren't that far away at all, but it is quite a hike at night when it's freezing cold like that.
And you got two little kids on your hip.
Yeah, and they can't swim, I guess. It sounds like she forded this stream up to her guts. And this wasn't just her. Like, the people around her, they had their places burned too. And the refugees started pouring into Adamondiaman where there was help.
I guess.
Joseph sees all of this, and in the book they say Joseph was so moved by all of this, and they always just paint him so wonderfully, but there's times when they just can't, and that's when they just say nothing.
Yeah, you got to keep the mystique alive.
Anyway, I love, though, that some of these historians like Jenny Lund that they've got here, they don't seem to be going the totally whitewashed story. They get to enter some of their more balanced narratives from time to time.
It's the inoculation. If they introduce just a little bit of, Joseph Smith was not the perfect guy that we've been preaching he's been for the last 170 years. When the faithful hear actual accounts of the bullshit that he pulled, they're like, oh, I've heard about that. No, that's an exaggeration. Yeah, I know he was just a man, but this is anti-Mormon lies. Whether they're doing it consciously on the marching orders from the church or unconsciously, it's inoculation.
It'd be nice to think that the truth will set some people free.
People are morons.
They really are.
And that's not fair for me to say, because people are primates who are not evolutionarily prepared to deal with the world we find ourselves living in right now.
Oh, you're so right, Jones. Oh man, this last job that I've been doing working at the bank, I just get to speak with so many different kinds of people, and it is a mess. I'm absolutely astounded that we managed to pull anything off as a society at all, now that I've got to speak with people that probably really aren't intelligent enough to have a bank account and yet do. It's just all fucked, Jones. And I'm really glad that I'm moving on to a different area soon.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
That's good.
They're taking their business in-house instead of outsourcing it, and we'll be doing something else.
Do you work at like a call center?
I do, yeah.
Okay. I worked at a call center back between the time my wife and I started dating and when we got married, and we were working on a cellular phone account.
I've done that too.
We were working on the people that have had their service turned off because they fucking didn't pay their bill.
Oh.
I hated that so much because these fuckers were so fucking mad that you turned their service off just because they didn't fucking pay for it. Ram, ram, ram.
They felt like they were entitled to a service with no money.
Right.
Which is horseshit.
It is.
You can like socialism, but you can't like it that much.
Not unless you are actually participating in a functioning socialist society, and that is not what the United States of America is at all.
I don't think it's what anyone wants, though, to be honest.
No, not that kind of socialism.
Because that's communism.
Right. Socialism is a great idea until you get people involved, and then it goes straight to hell.
Yeah.
And then it turns into communism because
that's right.
People want power.
Right.
It's funny. My eldest son has gotten to that age where young teenage boys of a certain mindset discover things like communism and discover things like socialism. And
oh, yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Sometimes he just won't shut up about it. I'm like, yeah, dude, that was me 30 years ago, man. I know exactly what you're fucking saying. And I know what you're thinking. And I'm sure you think you've got a great idea. Just give it a few years. You'll find out. It's all shit.
It's all shit. Just try and plow a middle road and try not to get hurt.
Exactly.
Oh, it sort of had that message, although it was unclear how it sort of worked out in that new Fallout series. I was wondering if you'd seen it.
Oh, I saw the first episode and I really liked it. I watched it with my wife and my eldest son. We all enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It actually made me download fucking Fallout 4 again on my Xbox.
Yeah, there's an update for it now.
I know. And it fucked all the mods that I remember using.
No.
They're slowly patching them.
Oh, shit.
I played around with settlement building for about 3 days and I was like, because, you know, there are new missions that you can do, but I don't have any old characters left anymore and I don't want to fucking do the whole game again. I swear to Christ, I played that game through like 10 times minimum.
I probably did too.
Yeah. Well, I know you fucking made mods for it. You're worse than I am. Thank you very much.
It probably doesn't even work now.
Probably not. No.
Oh, well, anyway, good to hear. I haven't finished the series yet either, but it's starting to get good. I think we've got about 3 episodes left or something.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the rest of the series. And if it's too good, I'm going to get really pissed off and be like chomping at the bit until the next one comes out. Until about 6 months from now when I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I don't care anymore. Right. And then the next season will come out. I'll have moved on.
That's right. It's just TV, Jones. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
All right. So clip 5, I've called this The Mormon Strike Back.
Hoping to weaken the mobs and bring a rapid end to the conflict, the Saints decided to march on nearby settlements that supported and equipped their enemies. Church and militia leaders ordered raids on Gallatin and 2 other settlements.
The Latter-day Saints respond, and so we get into this retaliating, one against the other, with escalating violence. 3 men are captured by what is assumed to be the mob, and the Latter-day Saints form a group to go and rescue them. What ensues is what's known as the Battle of Crooked River. This is really where we first get some deaths. 3 Latter-day Saints and 1 Missourian.
We later find out this wasn't just an ordinary mob.
No, this was a state militia unit.
So this is going to cause even more trouble. The reports get to Governor Boggs. There's some letters that are sent from dissenters, Thomas Marsh and Orson Hyde, testifying to the veracity of exaggerations of the battle.
The letters had a huge effect because here are 2 apostles writing to the governor to say, yes, this is true. The Mormons are resisting. They are on the offensive. Joseph sees this as a betrayal by those 2 apostles. And the governor issued what is known today as the extermination order, the background to the Saints leaving Missouri.
They thought this was the mob, and it turned out it was actually militia.
I know, right? How does that happen?
The prophet, if he had been talking to an omnipotent god, should have fucking known that, as opposed to sending these dumbass motherfuckers into an armed militia.
Right.
They did manage to kill 1 of the opposite number at a cost of 3 of their own.
They rescued those 3 people, but 4 died in their place. 3 of their own.
It was a wash from a pure number.
Yeah.
3 up, 3 down. If he's a prophet, he's not a good prophet. And they're talking about how these 2 apostles betrayed Joseph. When the Kirtland Bank fiasco happened and people were like, oh, wait, this guy's a fucking idiot and he's making shit up. I imagine that these 2 apostles were feeling the exact same way. Look, God is telling this guy what to do, supposedly. And look what just happened. And this is going to make everything worse.
He really can't predict the future. And time after time, his great ideas just turn to shit.
Exactly.
The mob was amassing in their own county, which is Davis County. So despite that, he orders the militia from Caldwell County, which is where Far West is, come over here to Adam on Diamond. We need saving. But isn't a militia supposed to be about saving your own family and your own area?
Not when the mouthpiece of God wants you to come and protect his shit.
Joseph is acting more like a army general. Come over here and fight our good fight for us.
Mm-hmm.
So these people come up from Caldwell County and then they get to Gallatin. All of the mob have taken off. There's no one there. So they just torch the place and loot.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they think that was a good idea? Why torch the place? Like, I mean, I guess in payment for their places being torched.
Yeah, I'm sure that was part of it.
Seems so gratuitous.
Stupid primate brain.
Yeah.
And it's not like they were a well-oiled machine.
Oh, hell no.
They were a mob of their own. These motherfuckers were organized by a cult leader. That's a fucking mob.
Right. That's a mob against a mob.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and I wrote a really stupid joke here. How do you tell if you've dated a Mormon? Well, they ride till it burns, loot what you earn, and leave in the night to return to their wife. That's a terrible joke. As soon as they got back from looting, there were mobs starting to move in closer to where this militia had come from. So they all hightail it back. And it's here that Tommy Marsh, I think he was from Far West as well. Once he got home, he's just like, oh, fuck this, and got out of Dodge. And so did Orson Hyde. Why didn't more people do that? I mean, I know, how can you leave your land? But if you see bad things coming, you just got to go.
It's called sunk cost fallacy. It happens to pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
I've invested too much time, money, effort into this to abandon it now. Even if it means I die, my children die, even if it means that I'm living a lie, even if it means I'm miserable, it's human nature.
Very true. Chapter 30, the last chapter, it's titled Fight Like Angels, which is a quote from Joseph. He goes from telling them to fight like angels to beg like dogs.
Right.
Literal quote. What an unprophetic prophet. The final stand is Far West. And I don't know what happens to Adam on Diamond. I'm guessing it just
gets abandoned.
Yeah. They don't really talk about it even in the book, as far as I can tell. Maybe they'll mention it later.
Because it was another failed Zion.
Right.
They didn't even get to build the temple at this one, unlike Kirtland and unlike Nauvoo.
Yeah, it's like they escaped to Far West so quickly they didn't even bother talking about Adam on the underpants anymore.
Right.
The next bit, it's a bit horrific, but let's plow on.
In retaliation for Mormons pressing Missourians out of their homes in the nearby areas, a group attacked Hans Mill. There wasn't enough time for word to get from the capital out to these outlying areas that this extermination order had
been
issued.
They weren't using it as an excuse.
No, they were not using it as an excuse. There were 17 men and boys killed.
Another man spotted Sardius and dragged him outside. He shoved the muzzle of his gun roughly against the 10-year-old's head and pulled the trigger, killing him instantly. One of the mob turned his head away. It was a damned shame to kill those little boys, he said. Nits make lice, replied another.
The Missourians have turned the Mormons into vermin to be killed.
Yeah, that's what war does, doesn't it?
Yeah, dehumanizing the other side.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. We're seeing it happening in the Middle East right now. We see it happen in every single war.
Yep.
Every single conflict, whether it's conscious or unconscious, in order to justify the horrific things they're doing, dehumanize the other side.
You know, I'm sure most of these Mormon families were just trying to survive, right? They'd come to where some land was cheap. They turned it into something. But how can you turn it into something when people keep coming in and burning your home? They definitely had a lot against them.
Yes.
History often looks at the leaders and how they dealt with things. And I think there's a pretty good argument to be made that Smitty was a shitty leader here.
Yes. I mean, he has in the past and will in the future put on military airs, especially in the Nauvoo period. He's fucking like the highest rank possible. He has no military experience. He doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. He's a poor farm boy / con man from New York.
Yeah.
It is not at all surprising that he fucking sucks
at everything.
Yeah, exactly.
The next amazing clip, one of those stories that are supposed to inspire faith.
Amanda Barnes Smith, her husband's killed. Sardius is killed. Another son is terribly wounded.
His hip is blown away.
When Alma regained consciousness, Amanda asked him if he thought the Lord could make him a new hip. Alma said he did, if she thought so. Oh, my heavenly Father, she prayed, direct me what to do.
Amanda is given the knowledge. She should use the root of an elm tree. She grinds it up and she makes a poultice that she inserts in the wound and then wraps it up. This takes a long time, but over time, his hip is healed and he's able to walk and to dance.
There is no way that poultice is responsible for his hip getting better. It just got better because he was young and he managed to make it work.
In no medical journal does it say, then the injury was the hip was blown away.
Right.
Okay. The description of the injury, the description of the cure, like he was able to dance. Okay. How well was he like able to do a fucking Charleston?
He did the Mormon slow dance.
Oh, I hate the Mormon slow dance.
And walks around in a circle.
You waddle back and forth in a circle and you're holding each other out at a distance so that you have room for the Holy Spirit. So it's really so that the girls are not forced to feel your boner the whole time. Only little Mormon boys. In Mormon culture in the 90s, when I was a teenager, if a boy asks a girl to dance, the girl must say yes.
I've heard that. Yeah, that's so whack, isn't it?
It is whack. Also, like, you were supposed to go ask girls to dance.
Right, yeah.
But I tried to avoid as much as possible, and most girls didn't ask me to dance. But, like, by the end of the song, your hips would hurt. And then they'd fucking put on November Rain by Guns N' Roses. And just when you think the fucking song's over, it starts back, you know, like, oh, my God. Horrible.
Well, let's hear Sarah Eyring's take on this miracle story.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to read these chapters and not wonder, where was Heavenly Father in all this? Why would he let that happen? But there must have been some purpose to it because it seems that he is there.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a purpose to it, but there's always the comfort and the support in the aftermath of something that is so horrific.
That's like a great this. Point.
That's a great point.
Oh, you just shit on my faith-affirming take on this. Yeah.
To be fair, Sarah couldn't see what the good thing was here, except he was healed. So Heavenly Father must be in this somewhere.
That is also a very Mormon attitude.
It is.
Something bad happened to you. Well, God wanted this to happen and you will learn something. Either that or you've obviously done something horrible and God is punishing you. But it would be really hard to try and use that particular spin on 17 boys and men killed and this little boy getting his hip blown away. So the purpose was so that there could be a faith-affirming story about his mom chewing some bark and shoving it into his wound and he can dance in a few years.
Right. I mean, clearly she hasn't thought that through, but
no.
There is nothing faith-affirming about
not
that.
Not at all.
And they rewrite it in their minds, so anything that it could possibly mean that isn't faith-affirming just doesn't get mentioned. We could never have it mean that life's just random. I mean, that's the obvious answer.
Or that Joseph Smith is a fucking idiot.
Right.
And all of this is a consequence of him flailing wildly trying to come up with shit.
Mm-hmm. Inviting violent men to escort Mormons to the voting.
Yeah.
Inviting violent men to go intimidating a judge.
Mm-hmm.
If he hadn't been doing that, I wonder how things would have gone differently. Yeah, I don't doubt that they still would have had a stigma about them. They may have been unfairly treated, but would it have gotten this bad?
Well,
I blame Joseph.
I blame Joseph too, but at the same time, that's an exercise of futility. What if? We don't know.
Yeah.
All this shit can be explained by human nature.
Yeah, it can.
If it wasn't Joseph, it was some other fucker. And if it wasn't some other fucker, it'd be some other political party or some other fucking rock in a hat.
Some other rock.
People are going to be fuckers to each other no matter what, because that's just the way they are.
Yes. This last clip is just a palate cleanser.
The goods of these people had been plundered. Cattle and horses were stolen in the whole fight. And so she knows she needs her horses to get out of there. And she goes to the man who stole her horses and demands her horses back. And she just takes them and leaves. And he lets her.
Wow.
But I'd forgotten I'd put that Oswin in. I just have a little thing here I want to say about the end, because they don't really talk about it, although they do in the Saints book. But how this whole war ended, it all went down in Caldwell County at Far West. And it started before the Saints at Far West knew that the Hornsmill Massacre had happened.
Mm-hmm.
At first, when the state militia are seen coming over the horizon, these people thought, oh, maybe the governor's come to aid us against this mob.
Right.
But no, they lined up against them. No one was firing anything. George Hinkle, he's the Latter-day Saint who's in charge of the Caldwell militia, makes the decision to tell his men, retreat. And then Joseph was like, no, what are you doing? And he's riding up between these men that are retreating. The actual quote is, where in the name of God shall we retreat to? It's like he's cursing now.
Mm-hmm.
He's being blasphemous, because apparently prophets can do that. Get back in line, get back up there. Now, it doesn't say in the book whether anyone followed what he said. I'm guessing that they didn't.
Right. Especially if they were grossly outnumbered.
They weren't grossly outnumbered at the start, but then another 1,800 joined them.
Jesus.
And then they were grossly outnumbered.
Mm-hmm.
There were two generals that were there, Doniphan, and then later there was Lucas. Doniphan was waiting for a written confirmation of the extermination order. So he was just, you know, being
cautious.
He wanted to give them a chance to just move out of their own accord anyway.
Right.
So Joseph stays all gung-ho and he calls a meeting of all of the fighting men, trying to fire them up. For every man you don't have, God's going to give you two angels to fight beside you.
Mm.
I bet these men were just rolling their eyes. There's no way they were paying any attention. He must have sounded like such an idiot at this point.
Yeah, things are falling down around Joseph, and he's like, no, you got to do what I want. I'm the mouthpiece of God. And they're like, you got us into this fucking mess. We don't trust you.
Right. After rallying the troops, they received notification of the Hornsmill Massacre. And then Joseph was like, oh, go and beg them like dogs for peace. I would rather die than you guys get massacred. He actually says that. Hinkle must be thinking to himself, he's okay with giving himself up if we get our peace.
Mm-hmm.
Hinkle went and had another chat with Doniphan. Doniphan said, we'll show you some mercy if you surrender your leaders, leave the state for good, sell your land, surrender your arms. You've got an hour to decide. So Hinkle went back, and he mustn't have been real sure that Joseph was going to go for it, because he doesn't tell him about it. He just said, oh, they want to talk to you about a lasting peace.
Right.
Smitty goes for it, and then he just hands him over, and Smitty is so shocked and angry, but that's how it all ends.
He'd already seen Joseph skip the consequences during the Kirtland Safety Society fiasco.
Yeah.
It makes sense that he would have hedged his bets and not given Smitty the entire information.
Yeah, I think he knew that Smitty was a fucker. Another thing it said in the book, despite Hinkle being the militia leader, having the right to order the troops as he deemed fit and meet with the generals, which is what he was doing. He was doing his job.
Right.
Joseph was always like, oh, you need to liaise with me first. You know, you need to come and tell me what's going on. Joseph sees himself as so much more important than what he really is when lives are at stake. Anyway, I'll read you out some of these jokes that large language models made for me.
Okay.
Some of them are just terrible. This one doesn't even make sense. This was using Dolphin Llama 3.
Dolphin Llama 3? Christ.
Yeah, it's an open source language model. Why did John decide to become a horse therapist? Because he wanted to help all those horse thieves, liars, and counterfeiters work through their trust issues. I don't get it.
What the fuck?
I know, right?
Okay, Dolphin Llama monkey fucker, I think we'll pass on that one.
Then there was a fart joke. Alma and Sardius were hiding under a blacksmith bellows with another young boy. Well, I think it imagined all of this. When the mob outside began firing at the saints inside, one by one, the saints fell to the ground with bullet holes in their bodies. The mob pressed in around the shop. From his hiding spot, Alma could hear men groaning in pain.
You know, I think I actually saw this movie.
Oh, really?
And this is actually sounding pretty much like what was going on screen. So maybe that's where it pulled this from.
Maybe it's got some training from it.
Maybe so.
Suddenly, the mob turned their attention to Sardius and dragged him outside. As they held him down, Sardius released a giant giant fart. The sound of the explosion echoed through the air as the mob recoiled in shock. Oh dear, AI, you really have a long way to go.
Yeah. Tragedy plus time is supposed to equal comedy, but...
not in this case.
No, not at all. I think comedy writers are safe, at least for the time being.
I think so. I've looked for large language models that are actually good at comedy, and there really aren't any. So it's something that's yet to be done. Thanks for putting up with this episode, Jones.
No problem.
I hope things are going well with you there in Utah as these elections ramp up.
Oh.
Look, I don't want to make you more angry. I just really want to make something that's hilarious.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
I guess this is my new normal.